Wham! Talk 1600. You're catching the drift. Conservative talk. Intelligent conversations on local, state, and national issues with Gary Wellings, chief editor of the Current newspaper and Current online. Stand up for. Join in the conversation at 734-822-1600. 822-1600. And now, your host, Gary Wellings. Gary Wellings.
Well, good Saturday afternoon, and thank you for tuning in to catch our drift. Joining me in studio, Brandon Drake.
Hey there.
Dude, it's like nonstop for you for the last 3 hours, isn't it?
I'm always on the air.
Always on.
Yeah.
Yeah. Lots to cover today, as always. I mean, what would we do if we didn't have Barack Hussein Obama as our president? Would we be completely bored?
Is he going to be your nominee? Or is that for later? So that's known in the radio world as a teaser.
That is your teaser. No, but I'm interested to see who yours is.
Mine is close to home. It's not a not a national figure.
Okay, good.
And when I say close to home, I mean really close to home.
Ooh.
No names will be mentioned.
That kind of takes that? It takes all the fun out of it, doesn't it?
They know who they are.
Yes. So from the president's speech this week to foreign news and here, state news, local news, we're going to try and get to everything. Your calls are, as always, welcome, 734-822-1600.
To go to war or not to go to war? That is the question.
Yeah.
Because it's really not a war. It's, a rumble.
Depending on what minute it is, we're either at war or thinking about going to war, or maybe not at war. I don't know. Conflicting. Matt was just talking about that last hour. I mean, it's like, if you can't name your enemy, how are you ever going to win a war?
Well, you wouldn't want to insult your enemy.
Yeah, well, that's what it comes down to. It's the political correctness that is killing this country. But before we get into the weeds, let's take care of some business. Our sponsor this half hour is The Current newspaper, CourantOnline.com is the website. The new website is up and running. It's not perfect or complete yet, but we're working on it. But you can reach me, 734-629-6010, if you want to advertise in The Current for the October edition. We've grown 6 times our size since 2007, so it's a good place to spend your print media budget. Again, 734-629-6010. Or you can just email me, gary@thedailydrift.com. So what we do every weekend here is we go over the news of the week that I put on thedailydrift.com for you. So if you're not going there, you should be. Tell your friends, share it on Facebook, and get this information out and about because it's the news you need to know. How's that? Did I do all right?
That's great.
It's rolling off my tongue.
Yeah, it just flows. Fluidity.
Excuse me. Our cough button doesn't work anymore, right?
I don't think it does.
Or did you just say that so that I keep coughing?
Just to mess with you.
All right, I wanted to start with, I was listening just this week about the rise in sickness in children across the country. And of course, you're not really getting anybody saying that since we don't know where the children that came across the border went, we can't quite pinpoint if there's a correlation between the rise in sickness of children going to hospitals with this new respiratory disease and if that's a correlation to where the kids went. So, but I did my little Googling, did my research, and there is, in fact...
Your little Googling.
My little Googling. There is, in fact, in Central America, specifically Guatemala, some outbreaks of the Entero virus down there. And what is this one? They did a survey down there, and they show that both the polio virus and the... And they call it the other Entero virus infections are very common in Guatemala. And that vaccinations are not being done as much as they should be down there. So,
boy, imagine that.
Well, it scared me. I'm reading that line, and this is from a bulletin from the World Health Organization. It scares me when they say poliovirus and other enteroviruses. Are they related? I hope they're not particularly related. That's all we need is an outbreak of polio. I mean, I can't even remember. Do we still vaccinate for polio here anymore?
I always think of FDR when I hear the word polio.
Yeah, or ever, or whoever played the guy in the movie, because I remember watching a movie. I don't think of FDR as he looks. I think of whoever the actor was, and I don't remember who it was. John Voight? Didn't John Voight play FDR?
I don't know.
I can't remember.
I guess my movie reference for FDR would be more along the lines of Winds of War and War and Remembrance, that great 80s miniseries with...
You have the greatest collection of old movie stuff. I don't know where you pick all your old movies and stuff up, but you sure do have a lot.
Do you remember that?
Yeah.
And remember, everybody had to get home that night to watch the latest installment of it because it was such a great series.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's what I'm trying to think. Who played him?
I can look it up on the break. I'm not sure.
Yeah, we'll have to look
I'm not
up.
Sure. But there were some major stars in both of those. It was like a two-part miniseries.
Right.
Each part lasted, what, about a week?
Yeah.
For two, 3 hours each night?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that was when TV was really good. Kind of united the country in a way, too, because there weren't that many channels. There weren't that many networks. And so when there was a great production on like that, everybody came together, would watch it, and then talk about it the next day around the, quote, water cooler.
Like Dallas.
Yeah, yeah, that's true, too.
Dallas held us together as a country. Yeah, well, maybe.
You know, I have a theory about, since we're going to wander a little bit here, I have a theory about television shows. And I think this is certainly the case for me, and I think it's the case for a lot of people, that when you watch a television program for the first time, you may or may not be hooked right away. But what will hook you is one particular line by probably the star of the show, not necessarily, and Dallas. I can remember the line that hooked me when I started watching that show as a teenager. And it was such that JR was, what was it? Okay, he was buying up all these oil properties in a foreign country, and then he was secretly selling them off to his competitors. But his father, who was kind of the patriarch, real boss of the family and the oil empire of the Ewings, didn't know that. And so all of a sudden, there was a nationalization of these oil fields because there was a coup in this country. And so it's being reported on the national news, and it looks like the Ewing family may be wiped out because they had sunk all this money in. But unbeknownst to everybody, JR was secretly selling off these properties after he had bought them at a very inflated price to his competitors. And his father, Jock, remember that guy?
Yep.
Comes in there, and he's just infuriated. And he comes into JR's office, and he goes, JR, how much did we lose? And JR looks up at him and goes, Daddy, we made a killing. I thought, I'm booked. I'm in. I'm all in.
Yeah, Larry Hagman was a bomb.
He was.
All right, so calling in, special guest.
Sorry about that.
Yeah, that's a good one, though. I love Larry Hagman, dude. It's too bad he's left us now. But calling in, U.S. Congressman, 7th District, Tim Walberg, joining us today to talk about the president's. Congressman Tim, welcome to the show.
Hey, Gary, good to be on. I just left an NRA seminar here at Cabela's in my district, and one of your compadres on WHAM, I guess the show before you on Saturday morning, Dick Kupke, was there with me. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, thank you for spending a little time down there with our NRA members down at Cabela's, so great thing to do. But lots to talk about this week, Tim. Let's start with the president's speech. I mean, let's just cut right to the chase. I was not happy. I was frankly offended from the get-go watching that speech. And give me your take on it.
Well, what were your, just briefly, your key points of being offended by his speech?
I was first offended by when he came right out the gate and said, ISIL, number one, when he called it ISIL, not ISIS, because a previous caller on another show had just made that same statement, and I've been complaining about that for weeks. It is Iraq and Syria, and I think for whatever political reasons, the administration doesn't want to admit. And that goes to, if you're at war, you better admit who your enemy is. And so when he doesn't say ISIS and says ISIL instead, I think it's a cop-out. And he's playing politically correct with a very serious game here. Secondly, he said they were not Islamists. Yes, Mr. Obama, they are Islamists. Whether you like it or not, whether you're unhappy about it or not, these terrorists are Islamic-based, and it's based on their faith. And then in that same vein, when he said that no religion calls for the death of others, yes, I've read the Quran, sir. I read it from front to back. I know it's in the Quran. And yes, that book calls for the death of enemies, people who do not believe in Islam. So I'll start with there, Tim. That was my first offense.
Yeah, and those I would concur with, except maybe we can talk about ISIS and ISIL and IS, as it's now being called, and the rationale behind it. And I think it also shows us that this is not just a little terrorist organization. This is the president shouldn't have called it a counterterrorism action. We're talking about a war here, a war that this insane Islamic, radical Islamic terrorist group is perpetrating and attempting to perpetrate on the whole world, but most specifically on the United States in the end. And we have to be sober about that. They are Islamic. You may be able to argue and debate whether they are radical Islam or just plain Islam. It is still religious. The history doesn't record that about the Crusades, and the president wouldn't make any bones about the Crusades being a religious and holy effort and war. So no, you're right there. On the issue of America being safer today. Where at are we safer?
Yeah, in fact, Tim, let's make that point really clear, because I've got that portion recorded, and I want us all to listen to that point. Let's go with track one, Derek. Do you hear that? Okay. Listen to this, Tim. That'll make your point even better, I think.
Yeah. We've done so while bringing more than 140,000 American troops home from Iraq and drawing down our forces in Afghanistan, where our combat mission will end later this year. Thanks to our military and counterterrorism professionals, America is safer.
Yeah. So, really? That was my second point, Tim. So, go ahead.
Yeah. How can we say that America is safer when, in fact, Iraq, after the effort and the blood spilt with the right purpose intended by our military in Iraq, the president pulled them and advanced the victory dance, not learning from history that the only way to secure that peace there is through significant amount of time staying there and overseeing it and watching it. He pulled it, and it's devolved now into almost worse than it was before. And when you think about the fact that ISIL, ISIS, IS, which is now called the Islamic State, because they know they control land space over there now larger than the state of Indiana, all its resources, including the oil resources, and are selling those oil resources at $1 million a day on the black market to fund still further their operations. What we guessed was a relatively small fighting force is now over 37,000 that we know and growing of trained, cutthroat terrorist fighters to do the dirty work that they need to do and not follow any rules of engagement that we follow. That's for certain. We are not safer. When today, this morning, Americans in Kampala, Uganda, were given a directive from our State Department due to a Al-Shabaab terrorist effort specifically against Americans, as was put in the directive, that Americans were to stand in place, stay indoors and out of sight until further noticed. Are we safer when we have Americans that have left Minneapolis, left Florida, gone over to fight for ISIL and ISIS, and have come back to the United States, gone back to fight and were killed, and we know that there are others that are being radicalized here in the United States, in mosques and other places next door to us? Are we safer when these terrorists can get away with putting American citizens on TV, on a video where they decapitate them with impunity and say that ultimately they will do that to our leaders and they will establish a caliphate and put up their flag in the nation's capital and over the White House? Are we safer?
Yeah.
How in the world could the president say that? Now, having said all of that, Gary, I have to say, what the president said in between that, and we can talk about some other things where he talked about his core principles, which is a farce, what he said. It can't be proven to be true that the core principle was that if you threaten America, you will find no safe haven, we will hunt you down. That has not been his principle, or we wouldn't have the beheadings that we've had here. But what he said basically at the center part
of his speech in the probably 10 minutes of his 15 minutes speech, I have to concur with. I think we have to go after to degrade and destroy. I'm glad he's using the destroy again this weekend, because after the speech the next day, all of his cabinet members and others that came in front of us from the State Department, from the military, including Dempsey, in a top secret discussion, they didn't use that word destroy. They used degrade. They used dissemble. They used disable. Those type of things. But cancer we must destroy. We can't simply manage it. And so when the president said that he would welcome Congress to give him additional authorities to train boots on the ground from that area of the world, and the authority to undertake that with allies that they're attempting to develop, I can concur with that. And I will support that. We're not going to give it in the CR, the continuing resolution. We're going to make it a separate resolution. So it shows the strength of what we're doing, as well as the awesomely important thing we're doing that puts potentially our American citizens on the line, but also says to the Islamic State in Syria, and the Levant, which, Gary, I think we need to understand, refers to the broad region that includes Israel as well. That's where they're going. And now when they're saying we are the Islamic State, they are saying, we are as powerful as a country, and we are going to come after you because we are the Islamic State. So this is a purpose that we have right now, and American citizens and my constituents, as I represent them, are going to have to help me decide how far we go with this. If indeed we must follow up the president's words with saying, show us, we want to see your actions as well, I think the American people also need to come to a resolve of whether it is time to go full bore, up to and including a declaration of war on the Islamic State.
Hey, Tim, I wanted to ask you a question and make a point and see if you agree with me. My question is, when you mentioned allies on the ground that we will train and supply, do you really think there is a such thing? Because in Syria, this so-called moderate group, I guess they are basically almost non-existent. Some blame Obama, saying that while he had his opportunity to train and build them up, but he blew it. My feeling is that these so-called moderates on the ground, they're weak, they don't agree with each other. They fight among themselves. And if we arm them and supply them, we're going to have so many infiltrators that are going to come in anyway. So we're thinking we're training the right people. But also, the ISIS-type characters, they are such a vicious, mafia, tactic, terrorist-type people that, you know, they have no qualms about killing their fellow Muslims, that they'll just go in and take the weapons and kill the people that we train.
Well, that's why. Assuming that we can vet these people better than we have done before.
Yeah, big assumption.
And that there is an assumption, and you know, I listen to people like Mike Rogers, who takes this seriously, and has had years of watching what's going on, and has pushed back against some significant things in that area of what we did vetting in Iraq and Afghanistan, where we blew it in many cases. He contends that we have a much greater capability now of doing proper and good and safe vetting. There is always a question, and in any war where you use people from the enemy side for your benefit, and we've done that in every war, there are instances, whether it was the Civil War or whether it was the First, Second World Wars, Korean War, or certainly Vietnam, where we got stung, but we also received some good help in each of those wars and conflicts. That's the question now. That was a question that was asked by a number of my colleagues, of Mike Rogers and other of the administration officials as well, in our briefing, what they thought. And there was common sense that we can do better now than we've done before. There's also something he said, that these Syrian resistance forces, which would generally be considered the Syrian revolutionaries from the east side, which is a side that we still have some control over, and we still see them having some ability to push back against ISIS and against Assad, and they've been able to hang on without our help, and they've been able to continue growing and causing great problems for Assad and for ISIL. And we also know that there are Iraqi troops, Sunni troops, that ultimately walked away because Maliki,
right,
who was mafia himself, and who brought the army into a sectarian problem with the new prime minister, who is not, and who is, we're seeing already, restoring a sense that Iraqis will stand together along with the Kurds, that there should be some that we will train up to 5,000, and I believe that's all I can say on that, up to approximately 5,000 of these troops. They'll be trained by our best special ops to do things that they haven't been trained to do right now, that they can be of assistance to us.
You know, you mentioned special ops and the airstrikes that we're going to use, and we have sea power, and we have technology with JDAMs and cruise missiles and drones, yep, and everything else. To me, that should all be utilized. The president really blew it when ISIS raised their ugly head. We should have been after them weeks, if not months ago. And, you know, what's really seems to be the case as far as political correctness goes is that nobody will come out and say that, yes, we are in a perpetual war with these people in the Middle East, in the Philippines, around the world, because they are in a perpetual war with us that they started. So if we can't accept that, yes, it will be perpetual war for the rest of our lives, certainly, for the next probably 5-10 generations, that's just the way it's going to be, I don't think we really are going to do what we have to do unless we accept that. These people are not the people that we're going to sit down and sign a peace treaty with and we're all going to play nice afterwards. They are always going to be coming after us, and so we have to accept that and just keep doing what we can do to kill them before they kill us.
Well, you know, that's the debate we have to have, and I would concur with you that we've been fighting the radical Muslim Islam jihadists since the Barbary Wars, right after the inception of our country, and it's continued on to the shores of Tripoli, and it's continued on to the coal, it's continued on to our Twin Towers, and it's continuing on now that we know they are training in our cities in the United States right now. They're being radicalized. We have to be serious about the fact this is not simply a terrorist action, this is a war. You're absolutely right. And just like the taking out Hitler and the Nazis, we had a period of peace worldwide that went on as a result of that. But that didn't last forever. And America that doesn't understand that we must be constantly vigilant and willing to lead, because no one else will. We have to lead. I'm not saying being a police state, not saying that we're setting up, we've never been colonial, but we have to be willing to say, regardless of what, we will protect our country against all enemies, both foreign and domestic, whatever that takes, wherever we have to fight them, wherever we have to protect them, protect ourselves from them coming on our soil, we will do it. But we will do it in such a way that it makes sense, but it is shock and awe. They must be eradicated. And I think that's what the Congress, my colleagues, and I will be asking from our leaders. Are we willing to change the rules of engagement like we did when we ended the war and we put shock and awe on Japan, a very sad event, and yet it saved lives by doing that strike in such a way that ultimately it ended the war. Are we willing to do that? And I think that's what the American people have to help us answer as well. Are they willing? Are they willing? Our troops are.
I think nation building is out. Forget that part of the equation.
Yeah. Hey, Tim, we're on a hard break. Can you stay through for another segment, or do you got to get going?
No, I can stay with you.
All right. Hang on, Tim.
Thanks.
We'll get through this and see you on the other side.
This This is the Blaze Radio News. I'm Cassie Wilson. Warnings for Americans in Uganda to stay indoors overnight because of a terrorist plot. The U.S. Embassy saying Somali terrorists, members of Al-Shabaab, may be plotting an attack. The group linked to Al-Qaeda looking to retaliate for the killing of its leader last week by a U.S. airstrike.
And now their focus is on Uganda because Uganda is an ally with the United States in this war on terror on these Al-Qaeda affiliates.
Chairman of the House Foreign Affairs Committee, Ed Royce, a California Republican, on Fox News. The search continuing for a suspect or suspects involved in the fatal shooting of a Pennsylvania state trooper.
At 22:50 last night, that's 10:50 p.m., at our Blooming Grove station, one of our members was ambushed and killed, and another was wounded. The wounded trooper has been operated on and is in stable condition.
State Police Commissioner Frank Noonan. The barracks are in a rural area east of Scranton. For a president who 2 weeks ago didn't have a strategy for dealing with ISIS, he's the target of a lot of criticism. The Blaze Radio's Ken Stevens reports.
President Obama, in his weekly address, saying the U.S. will continue hitting ISIS terrorist targets with airstrikes in Iraq and, if need be, expanding them to Syria.
What's needed now is a targeted, relentless counterterrorism campaign against ISIL that combines American air power, contributions from allies and partners, and more support to forces that are fighting these terrorists on the ground. And that's exactly what we're doing.
But retired Lieutenant Colonel and former Republican Congressman Alan West of Florida saying airstrikes alone won't destroy ISIS.
You have to go to war in order to be able to defeat that enemy and destroy that enemy. And furthermore, you can't do it from 30,000 feet with just air power.
West with Greta on Fox.
This is news on the Blaze Radio Network. Truth lives here.
It's time now for Wham! Talk 1600's Community Calendar with Brandon Drake. We can do it together. A rosy past, a rosier future. This will be a fundraiser for State Senator Patrick Kolbeck September 13th at the Yankee Air Museum, 47884 D Street in Belleville. This event will take place 6:30 to 8:30 p.m. GOP National Committee Woman Ronna Romney McDaniel will serve as Master of Ceremonies at the event, which will feature prominent women who built our country. Vicki Crosston, daughter of the original Rosie the Riveter, will join several other Rosies in sharing stories of the vital service to our country that took place right here in Michigan. It will most definitely be an interesting and heartfelt evening. To register online, visit fixingmichigan.com. Concerned about political unrest, financial instability, health issues, natural disasters, and confusion about what's right and what's wrong? Go to unlockrevelation.com and find out about the Unlocking Revelation event coming to a location near you beginning September 15th. There is no charge, and please come as you are. Find answers, find personal peace. Again, for more information, go to unlockrevelation.com. The Washtenaw All Wanderers Walking Club will gather for a regular monthly meeting Wednesday, September 17th at 7 p.m. at the REI Store Meeting Room, 970 West Eisenhower Parkway in Ann Arbor. If you enjoy walking, come meet the group of like-minded people and take some of the wonderful walks they offer. For more information, visit ava.org or on Facebook at Washtenaw All Wanderers. You've been listening to the Wham! Community Calendar. To have your event publicized, email community at whamradio.com. Or write to Brandon Drake, COWAAM, 4230 Packard Road, Ann Arbor, 48108. No matter where you are across the globe, you can listen to Wham! Talk 1600. In Southeast Michigan, keep us locked on your AM radio. But everywhere else, there's whamradio.com. All you need is a smartphone or computer. Just go to waamradio.com and click on the Listen Live link. See the latest updates to whamradio.com and be sure to listen to all your favorite shows live. From Washington, D.C. to Burbank, California, New Orleans to Toronto, wherever you may be, Wham! Radio is there. You're listening to The Drift on Wham! Talk 1600. Join in the conversation at 734-822-1600. Now, back to your host, Gary Wellings.
And welcome back to the show. Joining us today, 7th District U.S. Congressman Tim Walward. Tim, welcome to the show.
Good to be back with you.
Yeah, so we've got a ton to talk about. And before we leave this subject, because I want to bend your ear on a couple of other subjects, what can we do as constituents to help you force, or at least let you know what we want as the American public? What can we do? Call your office, contact you, how?
Well, probably a call is fine. Probably email is the best. And on my website, walberg.house.gov, there is an email link there that gets that the absolute fastest communications come through to my office. The slowest one is by snail mail because of all of the security issues that go with that. But the email is the best. My local office in Jackson, people can call there. There are staff to take the phone calls, and that's a doable thing. But emails give us an opportunity to directly respond to you in a reasonable period of time as well. I guess what I'm looking for people to consider, and what I would say is that if I were at a town hall meeting this morning, I would say to them, America, this is a challenging time. If we don't believe that the Islamic State or the Islamic State in Syria or the Islamic State in Syria and Levant, which takes in that whole Middle East region that they want to overtake, if we don't believe they're a threat to us, then I guess it's our responsibility to determine to let it happen over there and just make sure we protect our borders, which we have to do better than we're doing now. If we believe that they are already here, that they're planning attacks on us, they're planning hideous activities relative to our citizens and our freedoms, and they are being trained here, they've been radicalized here, they are planning to come here, then I think we have to look at it more soberly. And that's when I need to hear people think through the process of saying, well, we believe we ought to attack them strongly. But then, what are we going to tell our president and our national leaders about our support for them to go whole hog, not mince words, not waste time, give more support than we've given in recent years to our military might in both Afghanistan and Iraq, and say, do whatever it takes. We will suffer through the sad visions that the media will give to us of what happens when our awesome military might comes down on these crazy radicals, and there is collateral damage, and there is innocent loss of life. Yet, ultimately, we are showing to the leaders of this Islamic radical jihad that we are not going to be put off by them using human shields. We are going to wipe them off the face of the earth wherever they are, wherever where they find them, and there is no security for them. If the American people will stand up that way, I think there are colleagues of mine in majority that will stand and tell the president, we're not only behind you, but we expect you to be the commander-in-chief with all the strength of the American resolve.
Right. I will say this, Tim. On 9/11, Thursday, for the first time in 13 years, all day long, I expected breaking news of an attack somewhere. And that's the first time since 9/11 that I have not felt as safe, that I literally with dread turned on the radio or checked my internet or turned on the TV waiting for the breaking line of an attack somewhere here at home. And thank God it did not happen. And they were too weak. But I firmly believe that they are already here, sleeper cells, whatever, probably a lot of them right in Dearborn and holding up and waiting for their opportunity to do something bad. And what worries me is, you know, we've seen the massive layoffs of majors in the Army, of top military commanders from all services. It almost looks like a purge that we're getting rid of some of our best and brightest in the military, and that scares me. Is our next step to have an inadequate and ineffective military? If you're getting rid of midline and top line officers in the military, who's left to lead the troops when we have to do something?
We hope it's not the political voices. And in the Pentagon, there are plenty of politicians. They didn't make it to those levels in the Pentagon by being non-political. And that's what concerns me. When we see the pink slips being given to senior commanders in the field, men who understand the process of war and probably haven't been quiet about their concern about the leadership that's been going on, though they have, and I'll tell you what, I'm continually amazed at the discipline of our fighting forces and their commitment to patriotic service and their commitment to honoring the position of commander-in-chief, even though they may not appreciate this particular commander-in-chief. There are leaders in the field, I'm sure, that have had a hard time keeping quiet and probably haven't about their disagreement with the way Afghanistan and Iraq and now what's going on in Syria, Libya, Benghazi, all the rest have been prosecuted. And for that reason, there is no question in my mind that some of these pink slips have been given to those commanders because they didn't shut up completely. So, you know, we were told this last week in a briefing that the absolute minimum fighting force that we believe we need is 490,000. That's not talking about the numbers of battleship aircraft carriers and planes that has severely been hurt over the past number of years. But we are now approaching 400,000. That's a problem, Gary. And we need to remedy that. And sequestration that whacked at the president's pen, whacked the military and our defense capabilities more than any other area of government, is a major cause for this problem. We've got to get through this and begin to build like Reagan and like the Bushes did, rebuild our military might into a fighting force that can not only involve itself in one effort, but in the case of what we see in the world today, has to have the capability of multiple places to be able to be used in.
Multiple fronts.
In an efficient and victorious way.
Hey, Tim, let me interrupt you real quick, and I totally agree with you saying we should shore up our military. What do you say to those in the military, the political correct voices, that in Iraq, for example, said you will have lawyers, JAG officers, JAG people attached to combat units to essentially give permission whether it's okay to fire or not, because there could be some civilians in a building, for example? I mean, how can you wage a war on a tactical efficiency and combat effectiveness when that was the case, for sure, in Iraq, JAGs attached to combat units, giving the go-ahead?
That's one of the biggest regrets, as well as pushbacks that I receive when I talk with returning vets and wounded warriors at Walter Reed or Bethesda, that they were not allowed to do what they were trained to do. And they understood, unlike the Geneva principles that work with, and this is not an adequate term, but work with modern rules of fighting that had rules. We're not dealing with an enemy now that has any rules. The only rule they have is death and mayhem, whatever it takes. And for us to be bound by rules that they will never follow and don't plan to follow or go way beyond is insane. And I think we have to, if we go into this this fight the president is calling to get into now, we have to go with a resolve that says, whatever it takes, we will crush you. We will destroy you. You cannot hide. Truly, you can't hide by innocence. You can't hide in a mosque. Your religion will not protect you, because your religion right now, according to you, is what's causing you to do the things to us and to innocent people. And you're absolutely right. And I think our military voices have said that for a long time, other than some of the political military voices coming out of the Pentagon.
You know, that was very well put, and I hope that that's actually followed on the ground going forward. I think to a certain degree, and I want to hear your feedback on this, I think to a certain degree, any attempts at that, for example, not allowing human shields to be used as an excuse for us not being able to attack, our so-called allies in NATO. They seem to hold us up to this high standard, and they're not ever really willing to go on the ground with us and do any of the real heavy, dirty fighting. They just sit back and critique from afar. And for example, too, Britain, our so-called closest ally, they said, no, they're not going to participate in Syria. They're not going to go there because their parliament voted against that. I don't think we really have any true allies in the world. I think we have hindrances and lesser enemies, if you will.
Well, let's develop our allies as best we can, but let's never forget that America always has to understand that we are ultimately going it alone. We have to be the leaders. We cannot follow. And that's not jingoistic. That is a reality. America is the supreme fighting force, if we're willing to be that. And we must always understand that no one should hamstring us, because we're the ones that are going to, in the end, be the ones taking the greatest action.
Yeah, you know what really bothers me?
We need to be deaf to world criticism, and we seem to just respond to it and try to just try to be the good guy to everybody.
Yeah. How come the UN, Tim, has not said word boo about this? They have not stepped up. We've had peacekeepers, I think. Isn't there 45 peacekeepers still as hostages over there by Al-Qaeda-related groups? And yet the UN does nothing about sending in massive peacekeeping forces to handle the problem there.
Don't expect them to. Don't expect them to. I think that's the reality. And they only understand, the world only understands power ultimately. America has been that powerful force. Reagan evidenced that in all that he did. And that's why the world after Reagan was a safer place. The Soviet Union had crumbled. The wall had fallen in Berlin, and the Iron Curtain had been taken down. That was from sheer power and integrity and moral courage that went on. That has to take place again. When we have a Marine sitting in a Mexican jail, can you imagine if Reagan had been president when that took place?
Yeah, there would be no, he would have been out within days, if not a week.
Yeah. So this is what the ISIS, ISIL, IS, whatever you want to call them, this is what they see. And the rest of the world sees that as well, that America has lost some of its tiger teeth. And they'll keep pushing to find out how far they can go before we ultimately stand up.
Yeah.
I'm hoping that the president in his speech until proven otherwise, the only reason he made that speech and came up with a strategy to put forward that he didn't have 4 weeks prior, the only reason was his political purchase was falling like a stone, and so he stood up. But if that's what it takes, that his approval rating has gone down so far and it's hurting all of his political aspirations and that of his party, for him to stand up and do it, well, fine. But now he's going to have to back up his words. I believe Congress will stand with him, we'll shore him up, but we'll also, I trust, at least from the U.S. House of Representatives, say to them, Mr. President, we will not accept you to lie to us. You will be the one we can support who will do the job that's necessary to secure the peace of this country.
Okay. Tim, let's switch gears real quick because I want to get your take on a couple other items. This week, the Department of Justice, somebody in the Department of Justice called wrongly, made a mistaken call to someone in Daryl Issa's group, I think, and tried to get some information leaked. So it's basically catching the DOJ red-handed, trying to circumvent or get a jump on the report coming out about the IRS. What's going on with it? Has Congress, I didn't see anything major in the media. I didn't see any real reaction from Congress other than Daryl Issa's spokesman saying they're going to get to the bottom of it. Do you have any inside scoop on what? There's got to be a ramification for this kind of political nonsense coming out of the Department of Justice. I mean, that's outrageous.
It is outrageous, and that just evidences that there was almost certainly a planned effort between multiple departments overlapping in responsibility of government on the IRS issue, for Lois Lerner to do what she did and to have support, as we're finding out, across the IRS, but also in other departments and other agencies, shows us that this was a concerted effort against conservatives. when the Department of Justice makes a mistake and makes contact that ultimately comes to light in the committee, well, I sit on, Daryl Issa's, a committee that is doing oversight on all of these issues. It shows that we are going down the right track. Now, to say more than that right now, I think Daryl Issa and his staff been pretty mum on it, and his committee members, myself included, because we know that unless we tie the bow before we bring out the full story, the media will pick it apart by an action of 1,000 cuts.
Okay, so there's more coming. I was just worried that since we hadn't heard anything, it was going to get kind of brushed under the rug along with everything else Obama. I mean, that rug is no longer flat. Let's put it that way.
No, that rug is crunchy right now. But when you have efforts that we continue with our investigative team, and this leak didn't take place without I guess you'd say, the effect of the investigations going on that is turning lights on all over the place. And when I go into my feed room in my barn, when my kids had their 4-H animals there, and I turned the lights on early in the morning, I heard scurrying sounds. And that's what happened when light goes on. With Trey Gowdy and his very deliberate Benghazi committee, select committee, working now, you can be certain that ultimately all of the evidence that we can get that there is there to get will be brought up and will be tied up in a package. How soon that will be, because continued effort comes from this administration right up to the White House to hold back, to drag their feet, to circumvent the rule of law, to circumvent the power of Congress, the responsibility we have, whether it's the Oversight and Government Reform Committee or Judiciary Committee or Ways and Means Committee. It will take longer than it should have taken, but we're going to continue at it, and I think that's why your listeners' eyes have to be narrowed as we come to the November elections. That is not about policy right now. It's about bottom-line politics and the blood sport of politics to take control of our government again, piece by piece.
Yeah, and we need the ammunition. Here in the media, Tim, we need that ammunition, especially on talk radio, to let people know. I mean, it's very difficult. People hear this, the sound bites time after time after time, but we need something solid to give to the public so that they can say, oh my gosh, I'm not going to vote Democrat again, knowing that this is happening. I mean, in any normal country in the world, people would say, we're done. There's not going to be any more Democrats for the next four elections elected to office, because we're not going to take this kind of hypocrisy. We're not going to take this kind of criminal activity that is literally happening. But we need that. And it's up to us in the conservative news, AM radio, I guess, because you're not getting it on the mainstream. So we need that. So as soon as you get that information, let us know, because we really need to.
We'll do that. But let me also cut to the chase. The only thing I think right now your listeners need to use as a guide for their voting, because there's no perfect candidate. I'm not. I'll say that. And I'll say that publicly. I'm not a perfect candidate. I'm human. But I tell you what, I'm trying to live up to the Constitution and every vote I take, every bill I introduce, or every bill I co-sponsor. But bottom line is, you need to ask yourself, for any vote for a member of Congress, which one of the two or three or four that you'll be voting on that has a chance of actually being elected, which one will vote for Nancy Pelosi for Speaker of the House?
Yeah.
Secondly, on the Senate races, which one will vote for Harry Reid to be the continue on as a Senate Majority Leader?
Yeah.
That's where it comes down to now. When you get to the state legislative races, again, the first vote that they'll take is for who's the Speaker of the House. And then when you talk about governor, those of you in my district, the 7th District, remember that the one who's running as a Democrat for governor, Mark Schauer, went to Congress, defeated me in 2008, took me out of my seat as member of Congress representing the 7th District and replaced me. And Mark Schauer said, yes, Madam Speaker, and voted for Obamacare, Dodd-Frank, cap and trade, stimulus that stimulated only the government economy, cash for clunkers, and I could go on and on. Yes, Madam Speaker, I will do it, even though it goes against my district's best interest. That's the man running for governor. You may have problems with Rick Snyder, our present governor, but will you better be better off with Nancy Pelosi in that office via Mark Schauer? That's the questions you need to ask, because these last 53 days, it comes down to just pure gut-level politics. Which is the best to make sure that we go back toward the principles that our founders designed? And I truly believe you ask those three questions. Who's going to vote for Speaker Pelosi? Who's going to vote for Leader Reid? Who's going to say yes to Speaker Pelosi and Harry Reid as governor of the state? And you'll probably make the best
argument
possible.
Great. Well, Tim, thanks so much for taking the hour to come out with us and spend that time with us. So what's your website again for, because you're up for election too. What is your website?
It's simply walberg.house.gov. That's my official website. That's not a campaign website.
Okay.
That's the official website. Our campaign website is walbergforcongress.com.
Okay, great. Thank you so much, Tim. Let's get together again soon.
Thanks, Tim.
Good to be with you.
You too. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Okay, so not a whole lot of time left. There was something you wanted to do.
I wanted to introduce a little segment we might call Dumbass of the Week.
All right, let's go.
My nominee is, I was driving to work in the middle of the week. I'm on a country road south of Saline. There's hills and curves on this road. It's 50 miles an hour. I come over a hill, and there is somebody on a recumbent bike right in the middle of the lane about 50 yards from me. I couldn't see even what it was at first. I had to kind of focus in because you can't see these people. They're so low to the ground, and you're not used to looking for something like that. So as I passed him, he's going like 10 miles an hour. I'm going 45, 50 miles an hour, which is the speed limit. I gave him this look and a little bit of a beep of the horn, and he gave me the finger. Dumbass of the week.
The man on the recumbent bike.
The man on the recumbent bike.
Okay. Well,
so I know we're supposed to share the road and all that, but you don't go out of your way to put yourself right in front of a car going five times faster than you that weighs 1,000 times more than you. It's just pure stupidity.
Yeah. Endangers you and himself.
Yeah. Can you imagine if I hit this guy? I would have to like be dealing with it.
Yeah. I didn't get to put mine together, but I'll do a ad hoc Dumbass of the Week. For me, it's Gary Peters. Okay?
And well,
we'll do that.
Says it all.
Says it all. Gary Peters. All right. Well, until next week, go to thedailydrift.com. Stay abreast of the information and the news you need to know. Go to thedailydrift.com, and we'll see you next week.
Take care.